Good afternoon. Can you all hear me? Do I have to be close? We'll see. Start out with a few pictures of some evidence of abuse. I'm also involved with the Forensic Center. I'm a researcher with the same group that started the Elder Abuse Forensic Center in Orange County. And we would, people would bring cases to the Forensic Center, and there would be bruising evidence, except that the prosecutor didn't feel like it would stand up in court because, well, you know, elders, they bruise easily and they fall. And perpetrators, they remember things, and abused elders have memory problems. And so we saw some potential for research. And NIJ agreed with us. This is actually our second bruising project that we're doing now. The first study, the baseline study, is what does bruising look like in the geriatric population? There wasn't much point in looking at bruising associated with physical abuse until we understood what normal accidental bruising looks like. So Dr. Laura Mosqueda, who I work for, and Carrie Burnite did that study, and it was published in 2005 in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. And this is the follow-on study. In this study, we looked at bruising as a forensic marker of elder abuse. So we have the first study to do some comparison. So it's about accidental versus inflicted bruising. So I'll just revisit what some of the findings are from the first study. We just wanted to describe common bruising patterns, people over age 65. We wanted to find bruises from the beginning and follow them until they resolved and look at size, timing, location on body. You'll see some of the things that we thought were important to measure. The main finding was that 90% of bruises were on the extremities. And we did not find bruises on neck, ears, genitals, or feet. You can see all the bruises on the arms and legs. Other findings, people don't know how they get accidental bruises. I sure don't. So only 24% of the people could say the cause of a bruise. And this is a bruise that occurred within 24 hours. Because we found them within 24 hours. They were more likely to recall getting the bruise if it occurred on the trunk. Color of a bruise is not a good indicator of age. This is an old myth. And since we started, or my predecessor started doing this study and we published it, the child abuse literature has published something similar. You really can't tell how old a bruise is based on its color. We did a lot of very systematic analysis of this, and it could basically be any color on any day. Bruises resolved on average by day 6, but there were some bruises that lasted up to 6 weeks. So that varies a great deal. Medications, which you hear a lot about being associated with bruising, did have an effect. People who were on medications that interfere with coagulation pathways, is the terminology, were more likely to have multiple bruises. But the duration of the bruise was not associated with the medication. And just to show you other things we investigated, we tried to think of anything that anybody might think would be associated with bruising and looked at it. And of these things, use of assistive devices, whether or not they were ambulatory, gait and balance, falls, et cetera, depression, dementia, handedness. The only thing that was associated either with bruising or with characteristics of bruises was activities of daily living, which has to do with people's disability or need for help with bathing, transfers, dressing, toileting, feeding, incontinence. So now let's look at the new study, and the objective here was to describe bruises associated with physical abuse and to compare it to see what we can learn from the comparison with those who had not been abused. So this is how we did it. We have a great relationship with Adult Protective Services in Orange County, and they do a fabulous job despite repeated budget cuts. And they helped us to recruit clients. They basically asked their clients if they would were willing to be contacted by our research nurse. And then she would try to recruit and consent them. Those who were consented submitted to complete skin examination of their whole body, and then there was an interview with certain standard instruments. We couldn't assume that physical abuse had occurred just because they were APS clients who had been reported for physical abuse. Even APS doesn't assume that without an investigation, but we couldn't assume that the APS standard of what is confirmed abuse was to research standards. So we assembled an expert panel, and I'll tell you more about that. This was tough to do, but we ended up with 67 older adults with confirmed physical abuse participating. Our expert panel was four geriatricians with experience in elder abuse. Each case was presented to them, and here's what they knew. They knew the investigation findings from the APS worker. Our researcher collected data on a revised conflict tactic scales, which I've seen some researchers here use that for intimate partner violence. We modified that a little bit and used it for elder abuse, and we really like it. It asks very direct questions of the person who was abused. You know, were you hit, were you kicked, were you grabbed? So we used the physical assault questions. And then something called the Elder Abuse Instrument, which is a clinical interview to collect evidence of physical abuse. So those things were presented, and some of it in writing, to the panel, and then the panel could ask questions of the APS worker and the research nurse. They couldn't ask about the bruising. We were very tough on them about that. They needed to be blind to bruising as evidence so that they could make an unbiased conclusion about that. So they asked, for instance, you know, what other physical evidence of abuse were there? Were there other injuries? You know, was the person in pain in any place? Was there a police investigation? You know, actually, there's a set of these questions on our website. Every decision was unanimous. So if it wasn't unanimous, we decided we couldn't say it was abuse. So this is our N of 67. More female than male, certainly more Caucasian. 25% of the people were less than 24 on the MMSE, which is one way of saying they were cognitively impaired. A number needed assistive devices. Most of the perps were family members, almost 90%. And then if you look at the last elapsed time, that's sort of interesting too. We said we're going to see anybody within 6 weeks because we don't want to miss any bruises. We did, everybody we saw within 30 days. But the average length of time since the abuse, just because of how difficult it was to get out there, you know, and get involved in these cases, was 10 days. So I'm sure we missed some bruises that were already resolved. If you'll recall, those bruises can resolve within a week. It was a very tough recruitment situation. The APS workers approached over 400 of their clients reported for physical abuse. And either because they refused even to deal with APS, or they ended up being committed to a facility where we couldn't go in and do research, whatever some of the other reasons. If the subject was too agitated, we weren't going to approach them to be in research, and a lot of them are. So out of those, less than half of those, our nurse approached. She got about half of them to take their clothes off and answer all these questions. And these are traumatized people. We really understand that this is hard to do. And then the expert panel found that 67 of the 80 were physical abuse victims. So the study design is similar, except that we just saw the people one time instead of over this length of time, and felt lucky to see them then. And so the differences, we looked at all those same variables. We didn't look at depression. We decided that probably didn't have anything to do with bruising. And we did not find the association with ADLs and coagulation pathways. But we did find that those using assistive devices for mobility were more likely to have bruises. Now, we're not sure if using assistive devices was a result of chronic abuse or acute abuse. This is a cross-sectional study. So what proportion had bruises? Well, 72% of these people reported to APS, even though some of them probably their bruises had resolved, had bruises. And when we sent this in for publication, someone pointed out if you've got bruises, you're more likely to be reported. So I don't know if this is all abuse, but it certainly seems to be the evidence that's most prevalent in terms of physical evidence of abuse. And where were the bruises? Well, 70% roughly were on the extremities. If you'll remember in the other study, it was 90-10, so here's 70-30, so more on the trunk and head. But we can break these down a little more because we have another category. Before we had accidental bruises that they remembered or unknown bruises they couldn't remember. Well, more than half of the bruises they told us were inflicted. And so when we break down those inflicted bruises, you have an even larger proportion on the trunk and head. Now we're going to get into the comparison. And it's a little unfortunate the groups don't really compare all that well, though, you know, when you start thinking about it, it's hard to know, you know, people who aren't abused and people who are don't compare all that well. They have different characteristics. But it's really more of an artifact of the way the research is done. We need to be able to find people every day for up to 6 weeks. And so in the initial study, we had people in assisted living and in nursing homes. And so they're more frail. As you'll see, the no physical abuse group is older. They are on more beds, more likely to be bedbound. Their balance was worse if they weren't bedbound. Whereas APS, by its nature, serves people in the community. And so these are community dwelling. But look at how they're different in terms of they needed assistive devices and they fell more. Well, again, I think maybe those are more about being abused than they are about real differences. So they matched on all the other other variables. And the other real difference that I need to mention, just in terms of full disclosure, obviously, is that the no physical abuse were seen, they were seen many times, and we only saw the physical abuse victims once. So given those differences, I still think these are real differences. In terms of abused elders with bruises, remember how they got at least one of them, 90% of them remember how they got at least one bruise. Whereas not abused, it's less than a quarter of them. So one of the big findings from this study is ask them. Abused elders have larger bruises. So this shows that bruises smaller than a centimeter, all abused elders had at least one bruise that was larger than that. And the majority of them had at least one bruise that was over 5 centimeters, which is a couple of inches. Whereas a third of the accidentally bruised elders, their largest bruise was less than a centimeter and only 7%. So bruises from abuse appear to be larger. And where are they located? Well, they can be anywhere. I don't want anyone to think, bruises from abuse have to be certain locations. They can be anywhere, but there's a statistically significant difference in them appearing in the head and neck, the posterior torso, and the lateral and anterior arms. So, and, you know, you can't really say on the feet, but there were bruises on the feet, and there were not in our abused sample. So looking some more at locations of bruises, I don't have a pointer, but the lateral anterior aspect. Okay, so this is the diagram. It's like this. So this is anterior, this is lateral. And if you look on the right arm of the left side, there's a bunch of bruises, you know, along that lateral aspect. The anterior is here. So if you think about looking at someone, the lateral surface faces forward if you're facing a perpetrator, and this ought to be somewhat protected. It's protected more from accidental bruises. Most accidental bruises are on these posterior surfaces. You're bumping into things. So there looks like there might be something going on there. So I don't know if I'm going, I'm probably going way too fast. Wonder what I've forgotten to tell you. Yeah. So suspicious bruises are large, or they certainly can be. They can be anywhere, but note especially if they're in those places. And the main thing I would say is that you should ask. And we talk a lot to geriatricians, physicians, and try to get them to do this. Anyone who's a mandated reporter, this kind of evidence is certainly enough to make you suspicious and report. And certainly if you talk to them and they tell you, you need to report. We're hoping it'll also encourage police and prosecutors to pursue these cases. The data seems pretty simple, but it can get a little complicated in the explanation, so I think it probably does take an expert witness to bring judges and juries along with what's going on with it. And then I wanted to mention what I've talked about so far. We're about to get published, but we're continuing to do some analysis. We had a multidisciplinary advisory board, and there was a police investigator and a district attorney and an emergency room doctor. And we asked them, you know, before we went out, how to change our analysis to help them. And they said, ask the people to tell you the story of the abuse. And so we did. So we have stories when they told them, and not all of them did, to the research nurse. We also have this revised conflict tactic scales data about, you know, were you grabbed, were you punched, were you kicked, were, you know, those kind of questions. And so what we're looking at doing is saying, and it's a small N, you know, it's a small data set, so I'm kind of interested in opinions on whether this is worth doing. If we can associate the bruise location with a story. And it already looks interesting in terms of, you know, the bruises on the head. 8 out of 10 of those people with bruises on the head say they were punched or hit. And then if we look at the story, we can find more detail on the story. Those lateral and anterior arm bruises, 18 out of 23 of people with those bruises say they were grabbed. And you know, I got onto this, I was presenting some of this preliminary data, and there was a retired occupational therapist, and I was telling her about these arm bruises, and she said, you know, if you're handling someone roughly when you're transferring them, that's where they get bruises. So I went back and looked at this data. So looking at breaking it down a little bit, you know, you talk about the upper and lower arm. Again, small N, but 5 out of 7 of those bruises on the lateral right arm, those people were punched, and we have this specific story that they were punched on that right arm. The left arm, the anterior bruises here, if you think about a right-handed perpetrator grabbing the person, they would grab them and make bruises in that's part of the arm. So I think we've got another article here, and I'd be interested in people, if people think this is useful. I think I heard from our advisory board that it would be useful to show that the bruising evidence is consistent with the victim's story as opposed to the perpetrator's story. So if the perpetrator said, oh, that bruise, that's from falling, the victim says, even, I didn't mention, but, you know, we had data from even the people who had cognitive impairment were able to tell us, yeah, that's an inflicted bruise. They can often tell you a story too. If you have their story consistent with you know where the bruise occurs and the perpetrator's is not, you know, maybe that'll help put some of these cases along. I hope so. So that's what I've got. Our collaborators, Orange County Adult Protective Services, Dr. Schneider from USC came up and helped us with our lead panel, along with three physicians from UCI, and then our Elder Abuse Forensic Center has just been great in terms of giving us ideas and supporting us. So this is, Laura Mosqueda is the PI on this grant, and there is our team. And there's our website. So, thanks.